So you actually only started going to political meetings in London?
In London, yes.
Uh-huh.
I'm trying to think which one was the first one. I did go in Cape Town once or twice, but not very often. I know that the other day somebody reminded me about something. When were we together in the car? We were talking about Simon. What was that chap's name? I've forgotten. Kenneth and him, they were on the same platform speaking at the meeting in Mowbray somewhere. I can't remember the exact venue.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
But in London, the first person I went to listen to was Isaac Deutscher, huh?
Oh, really?
It was a big meeting.
Uh-huh.
It was really wonderful.
That was a fantastic meeting to have
fantastic
started
meeting.
Off with
yes.
Political
yeah. activity
that one in
is
London.
The most vivid in my memory, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Wonderful experience for me.
Mm-hmm. And so, do you remember the feelings with the onset of the crackdown of the state on political activists and the detention of Kenneth?
Oh,
do you remember
yes.
your
that was the beginning
agony.
Of my real feelings, I think, you know, about all these things that were happening. I remember now, let me tell you about when Neville's case, they went all the way up to Joburg in the June holidays.
Mm.
Because Kenneth had a big car and he could hold a lot of people.
Mm.
And they wanted me to go with this.
You don't know the date, though, but the year.
Pardon?
What was the year?
This is 1963.
Uh-huh.
It was the June holidays, school holidays.
Uh-huh,
right?
Uh-huh.
And they went all the way to Joburg. I see, I think what they did wrong was, and I'm not sure, they applied for passports. They were refused these passports and they weren't given. I can't remember the exact details of that. But whether they were refused or whether they didn't get them in time or what. So they wanted to go to, was it Swaziland? Lesotho or somewhere like that. Anyway, they didn't get these documents. So off they went to Joburg. They wanted me to go with. I said, no, you go. While you're away, I'll be on holiday and you come back. Now, as it turned out at that time in Neville's group, I don't know the name of it.
This Chinese name.
Nameless. They were now discussing where these cells were going to be, you see. And in actual fact, they had an infiltrator there, eh?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Because they were followed all the way up to Joburg, exactly, and all the way down.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
They arrived back on Wednesday, before school reopened, following Monday. And Thursday night was fine. Friday night, Kenneth went down to see Neville, because usually it was a sort of also a social occasion with these get-togethers. And Kenneth went off, I went off. He went off to visit Neville. And when he approached Neville's house, all the special branch cars were just parked everywhere, you know, them sitting inside. So he had no option, other option but to go in there.
Mm.
Couldn't just turn back. I mean, that's not the right thing to do. So he went in and he went into the house and there they were, you know, busy with Neville, turning his house inside out and so on.
Where was Neville living at that time?
In Lansdowne somewhere. Was it Lockerbie Road or what was the name of the road? I'm not quite sure what the name is for the
road.
But
it was Lansdowne.
It was Lansdowne. It's either Lockerbie Road or the road behind Lockerbie, which I don't know what the name was. And he went there, and they were all marched out into the cars and taken away. And then Kenneth came home to tell me quickly that this was happening. They said, I've got to go again. So now I was nervous, you know, I didn't know what was happening. My sister was staying with me at the time and she used to do an evening job in Rosmead Avenue at that big shop there. And I was waiting nervously for her to come home so that I could tell her that there's something I put. of course, from then onwards, from the time Neville and all the others, Leslie and Hayden and his sister and Neville's sister, Dorothy, and from Leslie's family, there were three people in Reston. Mm. It was Leslie van der Hayden, a chap you met the other day.
Yeah.
It was his sister Doris and his sister Liz, Elizabeth. So there were three of them arrested and put away. Mm-hmm. And Marcus.
Solomon.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And what's the black chap's name again?
No idea.
I've forgotten now. They showed the picture there. With the child, him and the child standing, his daughter. And they went, then off the... are you going to pour coffee?
Yeah, do you want... Can I get some milk?
Why? Yes, I have some milk.
Did you take how much
more? No, Kenneth, yeah, that's fine. Kenneth was helping to take Mrs. Alexander this way and that way, and everybody, you know, helping.
How much for you?
And then the next thing I knew, they came for him.
Mm-hmm.
Could you give me two, please? And then they came for him that Friday evening, again on a Friday evening.
And you were home?
He wasn't at home. He told me where he was going to. He was going to Franca. You know Franca?
No.
One of the chaps who was involved in this case, and he gave evidence. You know, anyway, his wife was expecting a baby, and Kenneth said, you know, and I've got to go and help Franca because the man's going to crack up.
Mm.
And he went down there, and I thought, oh. And there was a knock at the door.
Yeah.
And I was alone home, so I opened the door, and there are these two chaps standing, and you know, you can see straight away where they are.
Yeah, yeah.
So they said, good evening, Mrs. Jordan, is your husband at home? So I said, no, he's not at home, he's gone out. Do you know where he is? I said, no, I don't know where he is. I don't know where he goes to when he goes out at night. I don't particularly ask him. And then they said, well, you must tell him to come to Caledon Square tomorrow to room whatever the number was. We want to see him and he must come at such and such a time. I said, yes, fine, when he gets home tonight, I'll tell him. Because they left my place and they went straight down to Franca's house. Now, I didn't want to phone Franca's house because they were not on the phone. They had to go to the neighbor's phone next. And I thought, if I call somebody now to the phone, they're going to know that I knew where he was.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm trying to warn him or anything like that. So I thought, no, I'll just sit now tight at home and wait and see what happens. And then the next thing, they walked him in. I heard his car in the back, coming through back. And I thought, oh God, let me go and tell him he's had visitors. And as he opened the back door, I'm standing in the kitchen waiting for him to come in. I said, you know, Daddy, you had some. And I was just going to say visitors. When these two chaps, these two special branch chaps, walked in behind him and said, your husband will be held at the Weinberg. And if you need any financial assistance, you must go to such and such a place. You know, they rattled off so quickly you can't remember him. And I said, but my God, Daddy, what did you do? They said, ja, mevrou, jy weet nie wat jou man aanvang as hy sans hier uitloop nie. And they marched him in at the back door, giving him no time to take a brush or anything, a toothbrush or a pajama, something, out by the front door. And to the magistrate, to Weinberg. But half an hour later, he rings me, tells me, Mrs. Jordan, your husband is now at Mowbray. You can come any time to bring him food and clothes, etc., etc. So now I'm terribly upset. His mother nearly adopted her. Oh, we don't know what to do. The next day when we went there, and I never want to experience this again, my sisters went with me to Mowbray Station, police station, and at that time apartheid was very much the order of the day everywhere, you know, everything was separate, whites here and blacks here. So we're standing there now, we want to be served, because now it was a cold winter's day, we're standing, three little girls, my sisters flanking me on either side, and we're waiting to be served. We had a Ken's satchel with his clothes, clean clothes, whatever the chappie told me to bring. And they said, what did we want? I said, we're bringing these things for Kenneth Jordan. And each time somebody comes in, they ask us, and they don't send. So eventually they said, but you should go and stand on that side. So I said to my sisters, no way are we standing on that side, because once they realize that we are blacks, they're going to be nasty to Kenneth. Because they've made a mistake now. You know what these whites are now. I said, oh my God, they're going to think, what we've done now, treated them like queens and they're only blacks, you see. So we didn't move. And then they realized that we're not moving. So they kept us waiting and waiting and waiting. And my elder sister got so fed up. She said, you know, we've been standing here for more than an hour. And it's about time everybody's asking us what we're here for. And nobody's served to us. Nobody's attended to us yet. And they're starting to mumble themselves there behind the counter. And with this, the commandant comes in. The chop, right in the chop. He comes in and he says, what's happening here? So my younger sister, Audrey, who speaks Afrikaans beautifully, she went up to the counter and she spoke so quietly to this man in Afrikaans. And she told him exactly what had happened. And that we yearn not to see a criminal case, or bringing clothes for a criminal case, but for a political case. And we've been told that we can come any time. And now we've been waiting for more than an hour. And we have not been attended to. But he came from hell. They're all standing there, all these other little constables. They were, it's not my fault. I didn't do it, you know. Anyway, they kept him for 2.5 days or something like that. And then he decided that he was going to go underground, that he was not going, because he wasn't a member of Neville's crew, but obviously they were close politically. And he decided that he would not be want to be called as a state witness, and neither would he want to suffer the consequences of not being a state witness. He decided he would go underground and that he would leave South Africa. And that's what he did.
When you met him, was he still studying?
No.
He had completed it. Oh, because he was doing postgraduate studies at UCT.
Yes.
But
he had his degree and he did his MA.
But they didn't award him.
Pardon?
They didn't award him the MA.
They didn't award him the MA because he didn't complete his thesis, I think.
Or they didn't agree with his thesis or something to that effect.
Something to that effect. Or the woman who typed it slipped up on so many things, you know. There was a whole little incident. You see, he wanted somebody to do it the way I understood it. I never really knew the true facts about it. But I think that his mother insisted on having it done. And this person that she got didn't do it to his satisfaction. And there wasn't enough time for him to have it rectified. So I think that's what happened basically. Yeah. But he was very stubborn in his whatever he wanted to do, you know. Mm-hmm. Very stubborn. I suppose he took after his mom in that way.
How many brothers and sisters do you have?
He had he has one brother and two sisters.
Both alive?
All three of them are alive, yes. So the brother and the two sisters are all alive. That's the first one to go. His brother also has a heart condition. He had a bypass operation not so long ago. A couple of years back. Just at the time, no, 5 years back. Same time as Kenneth. And his heart attack. He's married to Golding's daughter, eh?
Really?
Yes. He's married to June Golding.
And where are they living?
They're now living in Bishop's Court somewhere.
Bishop's Court?
Yes.
As
Dr. and Mrs. Jordan, I don't know really. I don't know really very much about them because, you know, I don't know if I should say this because it's a family thing, but he and Kenneth had a difference years ago. Harold was hardly married when it happened. So it's about 30 odd years ago, 30 years or more ago. And they never, ever forgave each other about it. And I don't...
And he was married to Golding's daughter as well?
He got married to Golding's... Well, they were friends when he got married to Golding's daughter.
And yourself, how many brothers and sisters do you have?
Me, I have two brothers and two sisters. One brother, the eldest brother, died very young, 46. He died in 1966. But my eldest brother, my other brother, is still alive. Sorry, not the eldest. The eldest brother and the eldest of the family died in 1966. He was 46 years of age. And the other brother is still alive. He lives in Belgravia Estate, I think. No, Surrey Estate.
And what did Kenneth's parents do for a living?
Kenneth's parents? His mother was a very astute businesswoman, although she never went in for business. But during the Depression years, she used to help her husband by making a little bit of money and selling things for a shop to get extra money to build that house, because they built that house of theirs in Claremont. Pardon me, during the Depression years, eh? When there was hardly any room.
And his father?
Ability. He was a carpenter by trade. But he was able to do all these other things, and that's why they built the house for 2 months. At that time.
Did Kenneth write a lot? Did he need lots of time by himself to write and to do lots of intensive reading?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. It's a pity that you didn't come to my house, because then you could have seen the amount of reading Kenneth used to do.
Well, I can step in for 2 minutes when I take you home.
Yes. Okay, fine. I will show you exactly a few chapters of what he was working on when he took off in 1970, decided he didn't want to teach anymore, he's going to sit down and write a book. And then in the end he gave up on the book. I think he used to tire also, but he used to read endlessly. He would get hold of a subject. Now something will strike him, an idea. And to clarify that idea, he would read books. Just recently, I had to buy him all those books from Britain. Recently.
Yeah. Can I get you some more coffee?
Yes, okay.
Some more milk?
Yes, please. and he would read at night up till late at night,
mm-hmm.
and sleep most of the day. Rest.
Yeah, so Britain, how long
in
did you
Britain,
stay in Britain?
In Britain he used to write a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Pardon?
How long did you stay in Britain?
I stayed there for almost 20 years, and Kenneth just for a little. Because he came in here in 1981 and I came in 84, so he was there for 17 years. Huh?
Mm-hmm.
He did a lot for Grace and Class.
Mm-hmm.
As you know, he was on the editorial.
Yeah. And was he teaching in Britain?
Yes.
Mm.
Yes. Finally, you know, he didn't like teaching in Britain at all. He didn't like the setup.
Mm.
And it was tough going.
Mm-hmm.
And then he taught for Haring, the borough of Haringey, and he taught children who couldn't get to school.
Mm.
So they had quite nice kids. One was a boy who had Still's disease, which is a kind of rheumatism that attacks children, younger people, and they get to move during the winter months, especially in the morning. He's not mobile until about 11 o'clock. So he had to be taught at home.
Mm-hmm.
Kenneth taught that one. He had a very good relationship, those two.
Mm.
Then one boy was a tall chap. He was only 14 years of age, and he looked much older than his years. And he was the son of a mixed marriage, an Irish mother and a West Indian father.
Mm.
And there was this big boy. And people wouldn't believe that he was 14, because if he went anywhere on the trains, they would say, refuse to let him travel home, because he's not only 14. And so Kenneth even took him out to museums and things like that, just to prove that this was happening to him.
Mm. Yeah. Did you come back to some questions before you left about issues before you. Did you know the Tabata and Gul?
I knew of them, but I never met them.
Oh.
You know, the first time I met them is when Kenneth died and they came to my house.
Really?
Yeah, it was so sweet.
Yeah, yeah.
They really made me feel heart sore.
Yeah. Oh, but you had heard of them and about them?
Oh, yes, I knew of them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I heard so much about them.
Mm-hmm.
In conversation, people would talk about them and so on. I knew of them, but I'd never met them until that day when they came to my house.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's very interesting.
Yeah.
And just
they really made me heart sore.
Yeah, yeah.
They really did. Oh, and saying, Where is your two retired people? They haven't got much themselves. Eh?
Yeah.
Saying, where is the saucer? It's customary for a saucer to be here.
Really? Eh?
Yes, and leaving me $30.
Wow. It's really.
You
good
know, it here. Really hurt me. So I put it away somewhere, and I said to myself, I'll use this for something for Kenneth.
Yeah. So what are you going to do with Kenneth's books and his papers?
His papers, I'm hoping to take it to London.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I will, one of these days, when I feel I have more courage, you know, I will go for his papers. Because I'm even now getting interested in what he was doing, you know, in the days when he was doing it. I used to give him all the peace and quiet to get on with it. You see, I used to not interrupt him or anything. But now I feel I can perhaps
go through some of the things.
Go through some of his things and read his things, you know.
Mm-hmm. And his books.
And his books are there. And
what are you going to do with his books?
His books, I'm not quite sure what I'm going to do with them, because you know, a lot of those books I bought for Kenneth. And I don't think if anybody must benefit from it, then it's the Institute of Race Relations. They must benefit from it, because in the years in London, they were great friends of Kenneth's. and he was very close to them. Mm-hmm. And I still they still write to me and say, your institute family, mm-hmm. your family. Mm-hmm. So I feel very, 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 very close. When I was there, when I go there, you know, last year, 1986, I went there, and I had to get one or two books for Kenneth, you see? And one book I couldn't get. Mm. I'd been everywhere looking for these books. And I'd spend the whole afternoon in foils, going from one section of foils to another. And it's so difficult there, because if you don't know your way around, it's very difficult. One chap helped me eventually. And he said to me, go to such and such a cell and you'll find one particular book I had for Kenneth to get him. I got it there. I went straight there, and there it was. Mm. But the other book I asked him about, and he said, I don't think we have it. So I thought, well, I must go to the Institute. I've been there several times already. I've got a picture of him when I was taken with him. Mm-hmm. When I was in London in 86. And I went there, and Hazel immediately said, oh, John, or whatever his name is, go to such and such a place and go and look. And she started phoning around. And you know, within an hour and a half, I had the book. Mm-hmm. So that's the kind of people they are. Mm. They were and are. Mm. And they care very much. Mm. And I'll show you the piece that they wrote in the annual report that they had just brought. Mm. That's a tiny piece of what he used to do for them. And also, Siva, another chap was in charge there. The testimonial that he wrote for Kenneth. If you read that, there'll be also little bits in there about what Kenneth used to do for them. And they're going to write another piece in Race and Class, the actual
journal
which Siva has written. I've sent him some information from the side. And they will be bringing up something in Race and Class. I don't know if it will be in January or February, which journal it will be. Because I think there used to be a quarterly journal, and now a monthly journal.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I wish you best, everything of the best with your working, getting his papers organized and sorted out and hopefully published sometime.
I hope so.
Especially the book he was working on.
Yes, there are four complete chapters.
You should consider having them published somehow or the other.
Yeah, because I never knew how far he was with it. I never scratched in his papers, you see. I never interfered with his work, never. And while I was looking for other papers that I had to have, I said, oh, these folders, let's have a look in here. And I looked, and it was a folder full of his research work, the book that he was writing, and four chapters underneath, but all in duplicate. Chapter one, chapter two. I never even knew that it was there.
Wow, that was interesting. Can I get you some more coffee? Let me have some more coffee.
Yes.